Steve Argue believes that millennials are getting a bad rap.
There are 20-somethings. There are some that are playing video games in the basement.
Right.
And that's not a good thing, necessarily. But most are actually trying to make it. And when we laugh at the jokes about millennials and avocado toast and them only speaking in emoji and things like that, I don't think we realize how hurtful that is to a generation that's working really, really hard. They're actually working more hours than ever.
This is Family Life Today. Our hosts are Dave and Ann Wilson. I'm Bob Lapine. You'll find us online at familylifetoday.com. Helping our sons and daughters move through the transition years and into adulthood, that's something they still need parents for. Steve Argue is going to help us figure out how to help them with that today. Stay with us. And welcome to Family Life Today. Thanks for joining us. Do you think there is a harder job than navigating teens through the transitional years, being a parent and pointing them in the right direction?
Well, you know, our teens were perfect, Bob.
Oh,
so,
good. Well,
you know, for some people, I'm sure it's hard. No, it is.
I think you could call
those very difficult.
The worry years.
Yeah.
Of just like, what's happening? What am I doing? I have no idea what I'm doing.
Wait, this is an actual live human being you're dealing with,
yeah.
Right? It's a real person.
And it's the continual thought, I am messing them up.
For life.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Every parent has thought, haven't they?
Oh, yeah.
They've thought, my kid's going to end up on a counselor's couch.
Or in the
someday.
Juvie center.
Yeah.
One of the two.
Yeah, and it's my fault.
We've
mm-hmm.
got Steve Argue joining us today to help us as parents know how to navigate these years. And before we get into that conversation and introduce Steve, it's the middle of the month of December, and this is a critical time of year for us here at Family Life. We've been letting our listeners know all month. We're asking for you to make a year-end contribution to help support the Ministry of Family Life going into the new year. Your donations this month will determine what Family Life is able to do in the year ahead, whether we have to pull back or whether we can move forward, whether we can continue on our network of radio stations, on this local radio station. So this is an important time of year for you to think about, do we want to make a year-end contribution to Family Life Today?
And it's also incredible that your donation can be doubled.
Yeah, the matching,
gift.
Absolutely. We've had some friends who have said we'll match every donation we receive this month up to a total of $2.5 million. So anything you give is doubled. Go to familylifetoday.com to make an online donation or call 1-800-FL-TODAY to donate. And we appreciate your support. We look forward to hearing from you. And pray for us that we'll mm-hmm. be able to take full advantage of this matching gift opportunity. Now, as I said, Steve Argue is joining us today to help us figure out how we stay connected to our kids during the teen years and during their young adult years as well. Steve, welcome to Family Life Today.
Hey, everybody. Great to be with you.
And Steve is living in this world and helping.
He's an expert.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
Here we go.
He is helping pastors and counselors and folks who work with youth and with emerging adults as part of the Fuller Youth Institute, which is all about helping children and emerging adults. So explain to listeners, FYI, that's what the Fuller Youth Institute,
yeah.
Explain to them what that's all about.
We have a chance to study the spiritual lives of young people from adolescent all the way up through those in their 20s, what we would call emerging adults or young adults. And we get a chance to, through that research, hopefully help parents and ministry leaders and educators really understand where young people are coming from. Because as you all know, I mean, we all are sort of in this boat together. It's a moving target, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever worked for us back in the day doesn't necessarily work for us now. And so that moving target requires more resource and more support. And so we're trying to do that.
So here's what it feels like to mm-hmm. us as parents. It feels like the moving target is moving away,
mm-hmm.
moving away from a spiritual center. Mm-hmm. We're watching kids grow up in the church and then say, yeah, that there's not anything found there.
Mm-hmm.
The research has indicated that. Are we perceiving rightly that either we're not transmitting stuff well when they're growing up, or something in the culture is pulling them away from Jesus?
Yeah, you know, it's probably both. I mean, as you know, it's probably a pretty complicated story problem. But I think what we do see oftentimes is we see kids that really having a hard time articulating their faith. But when we tell parents, well, you need to disciple your kids or you need to help them with that, a lot of parents say, well, we never had that for us, so we don't exactly know what that means. So sometimes I find, especially in ministry contexts, there are a lot of parents that just feel like, okay, church, now you're telling me one more thing I don't do well. I don't educate my kid well. I don't socialize them well. They're on internet too much. They're not technologically savvy enough to make it in the world or get into college. Oh, on top of that, you're not helping them love Jesus very well. And as a parent, I feel overwhelmed. I feel like I'm failing them, and I really don't even know, understand what that means myself. So for parents, it can be a really challenging time because you want the best for your kids and you want to be a good parent. And at the same time, sometimes there aren't resources out there to really kind of help them take that next step. We make a lot of assumptions at times.
So parents can obviously get pretty discouraged. And I want to know, what does the research say? I mean, I know you open your book talking about the generation gap, and you say it's wider.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the generation. Talking about my generation. Anybody know that song?
talking about my generation.
Yeah, right. People there you go. Look at that. He even paused on it.
Yeah, you like that, huh?
Yeah, there you go.
That's right. We could go on tour, I think, Dave. That would be amazing.
You with hair and me with none. We'd be a match.
Right. I think we got something there. We'll have to look into that. Yeah, there is a generational gap. And, you know, I think what we're finding is that gap is getting further and further apart for a lot of different reasons. There's some research out there and some thinking that says when we think about this idea of intergenerational relationships, that there used to be a time where the older generation would sort of overlap with the next generation, that would overlap with the next generation. And though the generations were different, there was some sense of commonality. What we're finding in many ways is that it's no longer intergenerational, it's intragenerational, meaning that young people are having to reinvent themselves more quickly over their lifespan. So what that means is that the generations aren't overlapping as much anymore, that we're actually feeling this sense of distance. And we probably all can relate to that. Like, I remember when I was in middle school that I took a typing class. I don't use a typewriter anymore. The skills and learning that I had when I was younger are completely irrelevant to the world that I live in now. And so I think as parents, sometimes we feel this gap where our kids are involved with technology or ideas that we have no clue what that means. And to get up to speed seems like a full-time job in and of itself.
You know, right. As you define that, I'm just flashing back to the songs we were singing when I was a kid, which were "Come Mothers and Fathers Throughout the Land" and "Don't Criticize What You Can't Understand." Your sons and your daughters are beyond your command. Your old world is rapidly fading. Please get out of the new one if you can't lend a hand, because the times, they are changing. That's what Bob Dylan taught us all to sing back then.
And that's amazing. You know every word.
We're throwing down song after song here.
Well, here's the thing.
You say it like there this, has, Bob? The times, they are changing.
Yeah. There has always been a generational shift, I think, from the time of Adam and Eve to the time of Cain and Abel. The world changes, and young people often feel like the world I'm growing up in is not the one my parents grew up in, and the issues are different. That's always been a reality. I think we look at it now and go, it just feels like a hyper-reality today, like the change that has taken place is bigger and faster than it was a generation ago.
Yeah, well, I think it's true. And I think, like you said, I think there are some, you know, just cultural factors associated with that as well. As we look over across history, you know, family units were maybe in a situation where it was more rural, or they had a chance to really kind of be together. Generations lived with generations. And I think what we're finding now is, you know, the atomization of our society is such that people are sort of launching out on their own and in much earlier ages. I mean, I know for myself, for my daughters who are now in their early 20s, I mean, they're all over the country dating, you know, love interests that are not even close to where their hometown is, right? So we're spread out a lot more. which makes this connection tougher. And I think what we're also seeing is with technology, the beauty and the challenges associated with it, we're seeing that in many ways that young people are having to grow up more quickly. So we talk about this idea of in the book about 14 being the new 24, that what was typically something a 24-year-old maybe experienced in their lives as they were in that particular era or time in their life is now something that a 14-year-old is having to consider. The challenges, the intellect, the relationships, all that comes with that is just coming at them earlier and earlier and earlier.
And a lot of that's technology, right?
Some of it is, yeah. I mean, for sure. I mean, technology is sort of so accessible now. I mean, and again, the beauty of technology is we probably have a better sense of the way the world works. And the challenge of that is that so much information is coming our way that a young person doesn't always know how to handle that. So they may know more, but it doesn't necessarily equate to wisdom.
You mentioned the book, and we haven't talked about the book. It's a book called Growing With that you wrote along with your colleague, Kara Powell. Mm-hmm. It's a parent's guide to helping teenagers and young adults thrive in their faith and their family and their future. And it's for us as moms and dads and for youth leaders to have a better understanding of how we – it's not how we pour into the next generation. It's how we walk alongside the next generation in both of us on journeys, on spiritual journeys, right?
You're exactly right. My colleague, Kara Powell, who is the director of the Fuller Youth Institute, she's also a faculty member with me at Fuller Theological Seminary. We wrote this book for a couple of reasons. One is we just felt like parents are under-resourced. And also parents don't feel like they have a sense of connection with other parents going through this particular time. Especially in churches, what we find is that there's tremendous amount of attention given to young people up to about 18, including their parents. But as soon as 18 hits, the ministry expressions sort of change. Mm-hmm. And also parents are sort of forgotten, but parents actually are navigating this third decade of life of parenting in some really unique and challenging ways. And so I think a lot of times parents just feel not sure what to do, but they also feel incredibly lonely. And, you know, the other thing that Kara and I did is we wrote this book because she and I have both been in youth ministry. We wrote this book for ministry leaders as well. The one that we could give to a parent that says, is there anything that you can give me to help me sort of navigate this way? And we just are proud with what we've put together and hoping that it can be something that parents can really rely on. And we hope that for ministry leaders, they can once more show and be the rock stars that they are. And what I mean by that is this, is that your people, ministry leaders, know and trust and love you. They don't know me or Kara. But if you can have a trustworthy resource, you can make that connection. And so we really, really believe that you can help us help them in that process
and
as well.
Steve, you mentioned that parents can feel this sense of being alone in this journey. And I've heard that teens and young adults are feeling that loneliness as well. Is that true?
Yeah, I think so. And I think this is one of the reasons for growing with is that I think there's this sense that as young people grow up, there's this feeling that parent and child are growing apart. And as this growing apart happens, a lot of parents just give up. They start thinking, well, I guess that was it.
Or our kids don't need us or want us, so I guess I'll just pull out.
Exactly. And kids are feeling like, I want you in my life, but I don't want you to treat me like I'm 13 anymore. We need a different sort of relationship. And so this idea of growing with then is to say, as young people are growing up, parents must continue to grow as well so that we can cultivate an ongoing, changing, but beautiful relationship. Because in the end, we can grow with our kids. And I think they want that in different sort of ways. And I think we want that too. The other challenge with growing with is this, is that I think a lot of times when parents panic, they're like, as a youth pastor, I'd get this all the time. I'd get the frantic phone call from a mom or dad saying, my child is going through this, you know, in so many words, they wouldn't say it this way, but basically it was fix them, you know, save them, you know. And then as a young youth pastor, I'd be like, yeah, okay, I'll do it. I'll take in the coffee and we'll do everything. And what was lost in translation in that, I think, is that there's something significant about not just fixing the kid, but thinking about how we all are forming and changing and transforming into God, who God has called us and made us to be. And so all of a sudden, as parents, as we all know, I mean, I can't think of any role that's more sanctifying than being a parent. You're just confronted with your own fears, your own insecurities, your own deficiencies, your own mistakes. I mean, parenting is not for the faint of heart, right? Mm-hmm. And sometimes I think what we do is we don't want to look at ourselves and we want to fix our kids so that hopefully we can keep moving forward, when actually sometimes it's sort of looking at ourselves and saying, maybe we all need to sort of reimagine this a little bit. And that just takes a lot of courage.
We had a conversation recently with a mom who had a prodigal. And her conclusion at the end of her journey, decades-long journey with a prodigal, was, this was a gift that God gave to me because there were so many things I learned, so many ways I grew along the way. And I think as parents, we have to remember, we're not the finished product trying to complete the child who is unfinished. We're in process just as they're in process. And in the midst of whatever the challenges or conflicts we're facing are, God's doing something in us just like he's doing something in them. And we need to be alert to that and say, Lord, what have you got for me in this
Absolutely.
Season?
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's a courageous thing to say to yourself. That's not easy.
You mentioned in the book that 14 is the new 24,
yeah.
that kids who are 14 are already thinking and acting like 24-year-olds. And then you turn around and say, and 28 is the new 18.
Yeah, yeah. So 28 is the new 18, which is also true. And so what we're finding in the research is that it just takes longer for young people to grow up today. And there's a lot of reasons for this. I think sometimes it's misinterpreted as all 20-somethings are sitting in their parents' basement playing video games, and we've got to finally get them out and get them to get a job and get going, right? But the reality is that we live in a much more competitive world. Generations ago, a high school diploma could get you a job, you could buy a house, you could raise a family, and you'd be all set. That's not the case anymore. We're no longer competing with a person across the street. We're competing with a person across the world as we live in a global economy. So what it takes in order for a young person to grow up is much more education. Like sometimes even a college degree isn't enough. Now students need to get graduate degrees. And so you have this challenge that young people are feeling of having to be more and more prepared to actually make it in a world that is a bit unkind along with that as well. And so what's interesting is this, is that in society as well, a lot of even college-educated young people, their first job, you know what it is, right? It's the unpaid internship.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Right? Okay. So tell me how a young person is supposed to just, you know, grow up and make it in the world when more and more companies are kind of saying, well, this is the where you start. We'll pay you an experience, right? So to me, that's a bit of an injustice, but this is where young people have to start. And so this is what they're working with. The other thing, and my colleague, Karen and I, we just wrote an article on this, is we talked about this idea that for 20-somethings, we basically said, look, your work-life designations or your work-life life doesn't exist anymore. The two aren't separate anymore. And the reason for that is that a lot of young people have to get part-time jobs, or they're basically hired to do particular projects. And so employers have at them 24/7. Here's the deadline. You need to get this done. And there's really no option if you really want to make any money or you want to make it in the field that you're a part of.
It's not like they're getting overtime for their extra hours.
They're not
hours.
Getting any overtime. Right.
Right.
And so work-life balance, that sounds like pre-internet. Like, there's no category for a young person to think about that. A number of my colleagues in education, and especially in college, they're basically telling seniors, you need to keep reinventing yourself every couple of years. If you don't, you will fall behind and you will not be able to make it in the market that you're interested in. So the vigilance and the speed by which we have to somehow make it in this world, if I'm a young person, is quite challenging, and it actually takes longer. Now, there are 20-somethings, there are some that are playing video games in the basement,
right.
And that's not a good thing necessarily, but most are actually trying to make it. When we laugh at the jokes about millennials and avocado toast and them only speaking in emoji and things like that, I don't think we realize how hurtful that is to a generation that's working really, really hard. They're actually working more hours than ever trying to make it in the world.
And I'm guessing, based on what you just said about their life, reinventing themselves every 2 years, they're under incredible stress.
Yeah.
Anxiety.
Yeah.
worry, and as a parent or as an older adult, how do we grow with them? How do we come alongside that? Because that's their reality.
Yeah, so stress and anxiety is through the roof more and more. And unfortunately, I think what we see in society is that we basically are teaching our children just to cope with it rather than actually stepping back and going, do you think there's a problem here? Like, where's the rest? Where is the sense of what it means to be human and how do we help with that? And so, you know, I think your question, Dave, is a really good one. And I think as parents, one of the things we actually have to do, and it sounds so simple, but I think it's really important, is just to lead with empathy. Like the moment a well-meaning adult says to a young person, well, you know, when I was your age, we just need to realize in that moment, that's not a bridge building phrase for them. That actually is a barrier building phrase because they're going, when you were my age, you know, like there wasn't internet. Like you
still had wires attached to them.
Right, exactly. Like you got caught up in the wires. Like you rolled down your windows. Like, you know, the Berlin Wall was still up. You know, I mean, it just doesn't equate anymore. And I think it's well-intentioned, but I think we just need to realize that with empathy, we actually slow down and we try to understand where a young person is coming from and moving in that direction. My wife, Jen, and I, we had a piece of art that we put in our family room and it had three words on it to remind us of something really important. And it just said, tell me more. And I can't tell you how important that was for my wife, Jen, who's a counselor, and me in ministry. Like we have all the answers. We tell people what to do all the time, right? And, including our kids. And, you know, we realized that our kids were shutting down when they would come with questions or challenges or they didn't know what to do. And we realized that we had a pause. And instead of giving them the answer that we would give based on our point of view, we actually had to slow down and say, well, tell me more about that.
Years ago, I was leading a high school group of young girls, young women, and I led them several years through their high school experience. And what I realized is exactly what you're saying. Mm. They barely had time to meet. And to work at their schedules to find a time to meet every week was almost discouraging. Mm. And I remember one day I sat down with them. I said, you guys, I thought my schedule was crazy. Your schedule is harder than mine. What does that feel like to you?
Yeah.
In other words, tell me more.
Exactly.
The whole time, all they talked about was the stress in their lives of school, of sports, of relationship with their parents, relationships with their friends, the pull of the internet and social media. I wanted to cry and not realizing, wow, you guys carry some heavy burdens and pressures. And there's really not a lot of places to talk
about it. And it's really, really easy for an adult or a parent to say, oh, you want to know stress? I'll tell you stress. Yeah. I'm trying to pay a mortgage, you know, instead of going, tell me about your stress.
Yeah, both your points are really great. I mean, what I love about your question is whatever answer they gave you is awesome. But what's you're probably one of the few adults that actually said, what's that like for you, right? So for an adult to actually take the time and actually slow down enough to listen is amazing. I really believe that young people are looking for adults in their life that love them with no strings attached. Rather than I love you if, or are you going to produce for me, just to say, what's it like? I'm here for you, no matter what. You know, I mean, I think that's amazing. You know, and Dave, what you said too, I think there's a lot of truth to how we think about this idea of stress and superimposing our impressions on people. I think we do have to stop and ask the empathetic question. I think you're dead on.
I've never met a person, young or old, who if somebody said to them, tell me more, I want to know more of your story, they run away. Mm-hmm. They run like a magnet.
Yeah.
And you want to grow with somebody, that's how you're going to grow with them.
Yep.
So here's what I think for our listeners is the $64,000 question. Yeah. Okay, life is hard for my kids in their 20s, and yes, they've got stress and pressure, and the economy's changed, and the pressures are different, and I know they're going through all of this. What matters most to me is that Christ is being formed in them during this season, and I'm not trying to minimize what's hard for them.
Yeah.
But what I care most about is in the midst of this, that they're figuring out how to walk with Christ. And so I know I'm kind of asking you this question and asking for the 2-minute answer.
Yeah.
But how do we keep that front and center as we help our kids navigate this season of life?
What I find interesting, and I think what's really helpful, is that everything we've talked about here actually relates to this idea of faith as well. I believe, and we've seen this in the research, not only ours but others, is that I think as young people are getting older, they're experiencing the complexities of life. And they want to know, if the faith that they have can keep up with the complexities of the life that they're involved in. And so what's important about that is, you know, we talk about this a bit in the book, is that when we think about this idea of faith, this is going to be longer than a two-minute thing.
Okay.
Is that okay?
All right.
I'm ramping up here. I'm moving into preacher mode.
All right.
You ready? Okay. When we think about this idea of faith, sometimes the way we think about it is more like a noun. Like, I have faith. I could lose faith. Oh, no, where did faith go? You know, little Johnny has to get faith back, right? When we think of it as an object, then we lose it and we freak out when a young person says, I don't believe anymore, or I don't believe in God, or I don't have faith anymore, right? But as we look at the scriptures, I think what we see oftentimes is that faith is more than a noun. It actually is a verb. We don't just have faith, we faith. There's this element of faithing that's associated with it. It's this dynamic deconstructing and reconstructing of the way that I grow in my relationship with Jesus. And so when that begins to happen, we realize that questions of doubt or struggle are not the enemy of faith. They actually are a friend of faith, because what we're doing is we're letting go of the simplistic understanding of who God is, and we're developing a deeper, more profound sense of who Jesus is and how Jesus actually is relevant to my life. And I'll tell you something, young people, if there's space to actually wrestle with that, they're actually really open to it. You know, in a different publication that we have through the Fuller Institute, we talk about this idea of that the enemy of faith isn't doubt, it's silence. It's the moment in our communities or families when we say, you can't talk about that. That is a taboo subject. We won't go there. How dare you think of that? Mm. As soon as we go there, a young person knows instantly, I guess this is off limits. I will play the game. I will go through the motions. But as soon as I'm out of the house, I'm going to just do my own thing. What if we invited the questions and the doubt into our conversations so that there's a conversation that can begin to help a young person faith, so that they can discover and see that Jesus is more than capable of handling the most challenging things that come our way. But that's going to take a deeper, more profound sense of what our Christian faith is all about, which has to happen in anything that we do. I don't care if it's mathematics or a relationship or whatever we're working on, we always are developing and growing. It's the moment we stop, that's the problem. And so what I am excited about is that if we can invite young people into this, we can actually give them space to work these things out. And if they do it in a safe relational environment, including parents, then I think they have a chance to actually find some new ways forward.
So I was actually thinking about math as you were talking about doing it in all these disciplines. And I was thinking there was a season when, as a student, I was memorizing mathematic tables. I was memorizing the multiplication tables.
Yeah.
And that's an important foundation for the higher level thinking about math, that as you go on, I'm told, I never got there, but I'm told that the higher level thinkers are thinking critical theories, and they're thinking about more abstract things and applying, they're bringing the tools they learned in the multiplication tables to bear on the real life math issues they're facing.
Uh-huh.
And what you're suggesting to us is, yes, there's foundational faith truth that needs to be implanted in a child's life, but then for that to be applied in the complexities of life is going to require more than just reciting the tables, but now thinking, how does this fit and how does this make sense? It's really at the heart of what you and your colleague Kara Powell have put in the book you've written called Growing With, which is a book that we want to recommend to parents. It's a book we've got in our Family Life Today Resource Center. The subtitle is Every Parent's Guide to Helping Teenagers and Young Adults Thrive in Their Faith, Family, and Future. You can go to familylifetoday.com to order the book Growing With, or you can call us to order at 1-800-FL-TODAY. Again, our website is familylifetoday.com. You can order the book Growing With from us online, or call to order at 1-800-358-6329. That's 1-800 F as in family, L as in life, and then the word today. I want to remind you of something we talked about at the beginning of today's program, and that is the matching gift opportunity that we are hoping to take advantage of here at Family Life. With 2.5 weeks before the start of a new year, we're asking Family Life Today listeners to make a year-end contribution in support of the ministry of Family Life. Help us enter the new year ready to move forward, not to pull back in any way, but to actually extend the outreach of this ministry, reach more people more often. You make that happen every time you make a donation. And right now, when you make a donation, whatever donation you make will be doubled because of the $2.5 million matching gift that is in place. So would you make a donation today? We've made it as easy as we possibly can. Go online to donate at familylifetoday.com or call 1-800-FL-TODAY to donate over the phone. Keep in mind your gift today will be matched dollar for dollar and will help determine what the outreach of Family Life looks like in the year ahead. So we hope to hear from you. Pray for us. Pray that we would be able to take full advantage of this matching gift. And we appreciate whatever you can do in support of this ministry. And we hope you can join us tomorrow. Steve Argue will be with us again as we continue talking about what we can do as parents to help navigate our teens and our young adults through those years with their faith intact. We'll pick up that conversation tomorrow. Hope you can be here for that. I want to thank our engineer today, Keith Lynch, along with our entire broadcast production team. On behalf of our hosts, Dave and Ann Wilson, I'm Bob Lapine. We'll see you back next time for another edition of Family Life Today. Family Life Today is a production of Family Life of Little Rock, Arkansas, a Crew ministry. Help for today. Hope for tomorrow.